My name is Tracy Kelly. I'm 38 years old. I've been married for almost 17 years to Paul. I was a cradle Catholic, baptised and brought up in Scotland. And very much, Mum was always around. Mum was always at home. And when Mum did have to go to work, it was at night time. So I was never aware that my mum was never around. My dad was a very hard worker who worked in steelworks, and he provided for our family. My childhood was always very happy. I'm the second child of three. I have an elder sister and a younger brother, and primary school was very happy. Very good teachers, good preparations for the sacraments, especially First Holy Communion and First Confession. And during that time, our parish was being renovated, and we had to make our first confession. I actually made it in the kitchen, in the church hall. I can always remember that. And First Holy Communion was in the little chapel hall. And our old parish priest, who was an Irish priest, he was very clever, because any childhood memory I have, it is always associated with food. And I remember after First Holy Communion, Father Oates, God rest him, he gave us all the big bag of really expensive sweets. So I can remember obviously the day very well, but I remember that in particular because of the chocolates and the sweets. Going on to high school, probably the first couple of years was okay, and then the peer pressure starts. Having a boyfriend, people wanting to drink, all the promiscuity that goes with high school. By the grace of God, probably my mother's prayers, I had a really good friend, and we really did look after each other through that time. And in Scotland, there's a lot of bigotry between Catholics and Protestants, and that was the first time I met Paul's sister, youngest sister, who was a year older than me at school. And we were coming home from high school one day when a brick was thrown through the bus window. And that was from the Protestant school. It was because we were Catholic. And I remember Paul's sister, who sat behind me in the school, she spent the whole journey home just picking glass out of my hair. And another time in school, when I was waiting for the school bus, because I had on a Catholic uniform, a boy came up from the Protestant school and cracked an egg over my head. So that, for me, high school was not a very nice experience. There was a lot of hatred I felt in that time of my life. But thankfully, I could always just go home and speak to my mum about it. My parents always made sure we got to regular confession. At least once a month. We always had to go to Mass for as long as we stayed in that house. So I'm really thankful to my parents for bringing us up like that. There wasn't much devotion in the house, as in Rosary or Angelus, anything like that, but there was always a novena to St. Martha, normally on a Tuesday. And during Lent, our parish priest, Father Muldoon, another Irish priest, what a wonderful priest. He had so much devotions going on during the Lenten time. So there was a real chance, to every day you'd go to Mass during Lent. I'm very thankful for the foundations that my parents set up for me. My faith is always, I've never lost my faith. I've never not gone to Mass or confession. I've always just carried on. But really, I think the first time I ever saw Paul was when I was 15, so I was still at high school during that time, and Paul was already working as an optician. And I remember walking past, seeing him, and really thinking, oh, he's very nice. And it wasn't until a couple of years later that we were actually introduced, and Paul was just thankful that I was 17 then and not 16, so we began to date each other. And eventually, after Paul's round the world trip, he came back and we really began to cement our relationship then. And one time in Scotland, we were at a national conference it was in honour of the Dr. Billings, John and Evelyn Billings, and they were at this outdoor mass in the National Shrine of Scotland up in Kerfin, the grotto in Kerfin. And Paul approached Dr. Billings, Dr. John Billings, and said, "I just want to shake your hand. When I was travelling around the world, I came to see a conference of you when you were in Melbourne, and I just think the work that you're doing is wonderful." And Dr. Billings said, "Yes, yes, but who is that girl beside you?" And Paul said, "Oh, this is my girlfriend." And he said to Paul, "Why isn't she your wife?" So poor Paul, that whole journey, when he took me back to my parents' house, I was, you know, "Even Dr. Billings said we should marry, you know, what are you waiting for?" And the very next day, Paul proposed, and we had a short engagement, even though it seemed like forever. It was an 8-month engagement, and we were married in May, the month of Our Lady, and I was at pains to make sure that our bridesmaids wore blue, which they did. And our first opening hymn was "Bring Flowers of the Rose." So it was a really beautiful mass, and Paul and I used to do some voluntary work for 2 years before we get married. In Scotland it's called SPREAD, Special Religious Education, but in Australia it's called Personal Advocacy. And what you do is you bring people who are physically or mentally handicapped towards church, who are Catholic, and you give them a little teaching, and there's some activities, and then there's agape at the end when you have a little shared meal. And all the groups came to our mass. It was such a beautiful mass, and so many people, or so many of my mum's friends who are not Catholic, commented on how beautiful our wedding mass was. It was so noisy, and it was packed out, it was just full of beautiful people, all these beautiful saintly people. We'll always treasure that time. And then, as Paul said, we prayed a novena to come out to Australia. We prayed a novena to St. Therese. And even though my name is Tracy, my baptismal name is Therese. So she's my patron saint. And she's played a very big part of our life in Australia, especially when we first came out. And when you emigrate, you know, anybody that moves house or changes jobs, it's a big transition. But when you emigrate, it's huge. It was huge for me, being just a little girl from Scotland. And we were fortunate enough to be placed in a beautiful part of Australia, on the river, which was wonderful, in a beautiful parish called St. Columba's. It's in the Spanish design. It's just so beautiful. And in the church, there's a little chapel to the left, and it's got some most beautiful pictures of Our Lady there. It's called the Chapel of Sorrows. And I found particularly the first 6 months of emigrating very difficult, missing my family. I had no friends, I couldn't get a job. Whereas Paul was working, he was meeting new people. I couldn't get pregnant, we were trying to get pregnant, couldn't get pregnant. And then there was this picture of Our Lady with a blue mantle on, and it's a profile. And you can't see Jesus, but you know she's holding him, and there's just a finger. It is a picture of Our Lady of Sorrows, but I always called Our Lady with the finger. And I prayed to that picture, and I said, "Oh, please give me a sign, Our Lady, so that we know that we're still doing the right thing." And then I left the church and I came home and opened up this little Latin missal that Paul's mum had given him. And I've never opened up this missal before. And inside the missal, oh, it was so amazing, was a prayer card from Paul's uncle's ordination. I think he was ordained in the late 50s, early 60s. And the actual ordination card was the same picture as this picture that I prayed to Our Lady, "Please give me a sign." And I had never seen that picture before. And for me, that was a real yes from Our Lady. Like, stick in, everything's going to be okay. And soon after that, everything just, you know, the ball started to roll. I got a job and met friends. And eventually we did get pregnant. But unfortunately, we lost that baby. So that was a difficult time as well, lose a child. And we called that baby Jose Maria. And please God, one day we'll get to see that baby. And then, great joy after that, I got pregnant with our first child, and then soon after I got pregnant with our second child. And I found that, you know, being a mum, I've always wanted to be a mum, always wanted to be a housewife. I was never career-minded. I just wanted to be like my mum, always been there for my children. And I'm in a good position. Thankfully, my husband earns a good salary that I'm able to stay home. But those first couple of years were quite difficult because you don't realise just how selfish you are until you get married. And then you realise how selfish you are when you have children. I had these two little children who were very mischievous, and my daughter walked 8.5 months, and one of them would walk towards the river and one would walk towards the road. And so I found that time, it was a real test for my patience. And during that time, we met a family who homeschooled their children, and we were very impressed just by the way the children acted, how they could speak to you. You know, they weren't shy, they weren't sullen. They were able to have a conversation with you. And we thought, oh, these kids are really different. They're really lovely children. And we decided to homeschool then. And then soon after, we had our third, and then a little while after, we had a fourth. And my third pregnancy was a very difficult pregnancy. I get very ill when I'm pregnant. I have a condition called hyperemesis, which is you continually vomit through your 9 months of pregnancy. And Joseph, my third child in particular, you know, they're all very special, but I have really had to suffer to have him. And one time I ended up getting some viral thing on top of it, and a beautiful priest, Father Jim Shelton, came to our home. I don't think we had any food in the fridge because I didn't leave the house for 5 months. And he came and he heard my confession. He gave me anointing of the sick because I was really very unwell. And he prayed mass at the foot of my bed. I remember I actually felt as if I was dying, and that just gave me such great comfort. So I had never received the sacrament of the sick before, or had a priest say mass at the end of the foot of my bed. So even though that pregnancy was still difficult, that was enough just to get me through. And because of that pregnancy, I really felt, because I was so ill, you know, not having extended family help, I just felt, I don't know if I can have any more children, it's too much of an ordeal. And then Paul and I were at a day with Mary, and they always have books there. And as much as I've always had a devotion to Our Lady, I didn't really, you know, the Gospels don't really speak too much of Our Lady's life. But there was a book there called The Life of Our Lady Through the Mystics, and it was four mystics, and two of them are saints, one of them's a blessed, I think one of them's a venerable, and it's a book about Our Lady's life, the hidden life of Our Lady, and when before God created Our Lady, right up until Our Lady was assumed into heaven. It's such a beautiful book. Oh, you know, even though you look at Our Lady and you think, it was easy for you because you were full of grace. God made you perfect. You had a perfect child who would never have shouted at you. You know, it's just easy for you, Our Lady. But when you read this book and you see the suffering of Our Lady continually throughout her whole life, it was just such an inspiration. And I said to Paul, you know, after reading that book, Our Lady suffered so much. I really think maybe we should just try for another baby. And trying for babies was never very easy for me. It would always take a bit of time. But I got pregnant right away with Michael. I think God put Michael in my tummy before I had a chance to back off and say, oh no, I'm too frightened to do this. So I really feel Michael, he's a child of Our Lady. And when he was baptised, a friend, a priest of ours, who also comes from an Irish background, asked if he had had the blessing, the Irish blessing. We said, Father, what's that? And he said, when you consecrate, it's supposed to be your first son, but we can do it with Michael because none of your other sons have had this. And he placed Michael on the high altar in the cathedral and dedicated him back to God. And I just thought it was so fitting for Michael. And two weeks later, he was baby Jesus in the manger and he was under the altar. So Michael's very special. It's just lovely. And I've always homeschooled my children. Our eldest is in second year high school now. I feel sorry for my first child because he really was a bit of a guinea pig. Not coming from a teaching background myself, you know, poor Johnny was thrown in at the deep end. But through time, you know, I've learned how to teach and trying to be more patient. I mean, you meet people in the street, or, you know, I know when the friars walk out just wearing a habit, they're witnessing. But when you walk out with four children, even though I only do have four, people stare at you, ask questions. Are they all from the same dad? You must be crazy. You get all those comments. But to give a response back in love, rather than saying, I love my children, or getting angry, or people saying, you must have so much patience. I say, well, yeah, I pray for patience, or I hope to have more patience. And I remember one time an old man said, oh, are they all yours? And he was probably from 10, and I had a bit of a joke, and I said to him, I'm having a hard day, do you want one of them? And his whole demeanour, he just softened, and he had a laugh with me. So that was really lovely, and they really are a blessing. It's difficult at times, especially when you're home, and my husband works long hours. You know, one of our confessors, Father Joseph, who's a Franciscan, he always says, in those moments when you're really being tested, ask Mother Mary to help you, but also ask your child's guardian angel to help your child. Have a real devotion to your guardian angel. And another friend who's a homeschool mum, she has a thing called a mini retreat. When she goes into her pantry in the kitchen and she just closes the door behind her, and she'll just say a quick prayer, please Lord help me. And sometimes that's the only prayer you can say in an hour. Or I'll fly in here into our front room where our enthronement to the Sacred Heart is. And sometimes I don't get down on my knees. I just go right up to the picture of the Sacred Heart and I say, Jesus, please just fix it, because I just don't have time. And he does. The children come in and they see that, you know, it's difficult. Mum's having a difficult day. It's normally a Monday when, you know, you've had a nice weekend and I'm having to get the books out again. But Jesus, please help me. Or I'll just bend my head down when I'm feeling as I'm about to explode and just say a Hail Mary out loud. And the children just calm down. And when Paul said that we didn't have a TV, I was brought up with TV, TV dinners. And when Paul said to me, you know, when we get married, we're not going to have a TV, I went, what? No TV, I can't watch all these soaps that I was so addicted to. But it really has been the best thing for our marriage. And I remember when I was in the hospital, I think it was having my fourth child, the nurse said, oh, is this your fourth? You must be Catholic, and I bet you don't have a TV. And I went, that's right, twice. I'm a Catholic and I don't have a TV. Being married has been such a wonderful thing for me. And when we decided not to have TV, it just really brought Paul and I close together. He worked long hours the first couple of years of our marriage, and I couldn't cook. So poor Paul, we'd come home from work at night and I'd say, what's for dinner? And through time, I did learn how to cook and look after my husband, because my mum, as much as my mum's a wonderful mother, she did everything for her children. So when I got married, we read more, we talked more, we played games, board games, and that's continued throughout our married life. And now that the children are getting old enough, they can now participate in these family board games, which is great fun. So you really don't need a TV to entertain you. As much as I do like movies, and we've been collecting our own shelf of movies that we hope to enjoy with our children when they're a bit older, Lives of the Saints movies, and also old movies that are moral and good. And once when we were getting new blinds fitted into our home, a young man came in to our home. Paul was at work and I just had the children, and it was the usual comment, why are they here? They're not at school, we homeschool. And when he was measuring up the windows, he said, I just don't know what it is, but there's just something about this house. I'm trying to work out what it is. It's just so peaceful. And I said, oh, we don't have TV. And it was as if I was an alien. He couldn't believe it. And then he realised, he went, oh, that's right, no TV. And even sound, quite often I don't play music. It's a real treat for the children to have music in the car. Because I just like the peace. and to be home with their children, and just to watch them grow. You know, they can be as boisterous as any child. But this room, this front room that we're in, we've had mass prayed in this room a few times. It's just such a peaceful room. We call this our prayer room. And just a few nights ago, my husband and I were talking about heaven and our longing for heaven and how to get there. And, you know, we're not members of Opus Dei, but, you know, what they believe in is you just do whatever you're doing today and do it well. Do your work well. Do the washing well. Do the little way well. You know, sweeping, the washing, the dishes, the cooking. And those days when I really just don't want to do it, I'd rather just stay in bed, or I'd rather just go out on my own. But when I sweep the floor, you know, sometimes I say to myself, I'm actually doing this for you, Jesus, because you need this. You need me to sweep the floor right now. And when I do that, I actually do it with joy. I'm not grudging sweeping the floor or the mess that the children have made. I'm doing it because of love of Him. When I was in confession the other day, a priest asked me to pray for a young girl who's at school, who's finding part of school difficult. And I said, oh, okay, Father, I'll offer up my Monday for her. This is another friar. And he said, you'll do what? And I said, I'll offer up my Monday for her. He said, oh, okay. Can you tell me about that? I said, I always find Mondays difficult. There's so much washing to do. So I'll think about her when I'm hanging up my washing. So all those little things, all those mundane things that we do as mothers that nobody sees, even the children don't really see it unless you get them to help you, which I'm trying to do more now. God sees it all. All those pegs, all those clothes, the folding, the ironing, the putting away. It's all jewels. It's all priceless. And sorry, going back to the conversation my husband and I were having the other day, we were talking about who would we like to meet when, please God, we get to heaven, apart from, you know, our Lord, our Lady. Who do you want to sit down and have a conversation with? And I've just finished reading The Story of a Soul of St. Therese, and it's just so beautiful. And I thought, okay, she's an obvious choice for me, but I'd really love to sit down and speak to St. Anthony of Padua. And today the reading at Mass was talking about your tongue and how that little thing in your mouth, how it can cause so much grief if we don't hold it and watch what we say and not be cruel and not gossip. And I thought of St. Anthony of Padua's incorrupt tongue and how beautiful a saint he must have been. And we went round the children in the car on the way back from Mass, and they all told us who they would all like to meet. So there was Padre Pio and Catherine of Siena and Dominic Savio. And my eldest child said, oh, I just can't wait to meet him. He died as a young teenager. And, you know, for him to be able to break up fights and not lose his temper, he said, that really inspires me. I really want to be like him. And just having those conversations with your children, it doesn't always have to be about sport or the latest fashion or things that you're going to eat. You know, just bringing in the saints, like the saints to be a part of your life, and really flying to them. You know, when you're in difficulty, we pray a decade in the morning before we start school because we know we need the prayers. And our school is dedicated to St. Therese because she didn't like school, but she persevered. Having just little contacts with God throughout the day, not getting demoralised by, you know, the car that you're sitting behind when they've got an obscene sticker that you know your children can read, even though you're saying eyes down or don't look, it's very hard, or the bus you're sitting behind with an immoral picture, you can just keep bringing it back, just filling it up with hope and beauty. Reading the lives of the saints to your children, frequenting the sacraments regularly. I really personally try to get to confession fortnightly. And around about 3 weeks, I feel itchy. I just really need to get to confession. And I'm always nervous before I go in because I love confession, but I'm always anxious when I go in because it's such an embarrassment isn't it, to confess your sins. But the joy and the peace afterwards when you come out, I just feel like a little girl again, just so happy. And I know the moment I see the children again, I step into the car, it's an attack again. You know, they're maybe playing up, whatever, but just keep going. You just keep persevering, because I know that this is my lot in life. My lot is to be married. And thank God I have a happy marriage and I have healthy, beautiful children. But they're my ticket to heaven, and that's my goal. When my husband and I talk about heaven, we've often said, you know, if God gave you the chance right now, what would you do? If he came to you now and said, I'll take you to heaven now, what would you do? And I'd say, oh, if I could go with you and the children, I'd go right now. And he'd go, oh, would you? And he feels he's still got work to do. He's more of an evangelist. He wants to reach out to so many more people. So I'm selfish in that way. I don't want to be there now, because obviously I've got a duty to children, but my hope and my joy is there, not here. This is really all passing, and I've got a good friend, you know, when you see cracks in the walls or the children break things, or you've just cleaned the house, and then because you homeschool, they're here all the time, so it's just continual. The message is continual. But she said, remember, everything here is passing. It's all passing to dust. And if you went away for a year, when you come back, your house will be full of dust and cobwebs, because nature takes over. So don't focus here, focus up. Look towards the sky. When you're feeling down, go and look at the sunset. We are very blessed here in Western Australia, because we have gorgeous sunsets. We're near the beach. The sky is just beautiful here. And as much as I love Scotland, but when you go over there, the sky is so grey. So we're so blessed here in Western Australia with such beautiful sky.